Listen to this sentence. We need to strategically leverage our cross-functional synergies to optimize stakeholder alignment and drive KPI-centric outcomes. Now listen to this. Let's work together so our clients get results. Same idea, one sentence. Which person would you follow?
If you have ever loaded a sentence that high with jargon to sound credible, I hope this episode will change how you think and how you speak.
Today on The Fluent Edge, we're taking apart one of the biggest myths in professional communication. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Fluent Edge, the podcast for professionals around the world who want to speak English with more confidence and clarity. I'm Sean Watson, your English communication coach.
And I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, author, leadership coach, and mindset strategist.
So this might feel a little uncomfortable because we're going to question something a lot of people may have believed their whole careers.
Which is that complexity is a good signal for intelligence.
And by the end, you'll have a new way to think about language, a few phrases you can use right away, and a challenge that will change how people see you in meetings, in emails, and in important conversations. Let's go. So Howie, you've coached many executives over the years. What, if anything, has surprised you most about how executives use language?
Yeah, the thing that really struck me was that as people rose in their organizational hierarchies and they gained more power, more authority, more influence, their language tended to be simpler and more direct. They didn't feel the need to impress so much, and so they used the minimum words necessary to convey what they were trying to convey, or to say what they meant, is another way of saying that.
To mean what you say and say what you mean, all of that. And that kind of connects to this idea of the curse of knowledge. That once you've really mastered something, it's difficult to go back to not knowing that. And if you're a musician or somebody who's writing songs and you can hear the full melody or the structure of the song in your head, but maybe the person sitting with you, they just look at you tapping the table or something. They have no idea what's actually going on in your head with that. So for you, Howie, from a leadership point of view, what does that cost a leader?
One thing it costs a leader is when you're using complicated, overly flowery language, the sort of thing that those of us who grew up in North America probably studied for our boards to get into a college. All these vocabulary words that I've never used since and have hardly ever seen in print, it tends to make people think you're trying to cover up. It looks a little bit like a mask. And that first sentence that you gave as an example about synergies and KPI, those words are very popular if you look at mission statements. And the reason they're so popular is that they don't actually mean anything. They don't refer to anything. So if I say, we need to work together synergistically, Sean, you could nod your head, but then I'll say, why don't you do the editing? I'll come up with the script. You go over the script. We could look at it together and make it better. Those are simple words that actually talk about what we're doing, as opposed to let's be synergistic. And so what it costs executives is clarity, because there's a difference between using a technical word because it's the right word and using a fancy word to cover up the fact that you don't actually know what you're doing.
There's some interesting research on this too. I discovered this psychologist named Daniel Oppenheimer from Princeton, and he found that when people use simpler language, others see them as more intelligent and more trustworthy generally. So the instinct is completely backwards in a way.
Yeah, it reminds me a little of the fable of the emperor's new clothes, where if you hear somebody using very fancy language, you might think that's an attribute of intelligence. When you listen to what they're actually saying, and if you have confidence in your own ability to think, then you might realize that the really credible person is the one who is speaking simply, who is making sure that everyone understands, even in a high-level organization, there's going to be different levels of English mastery. There's going to be people with very different backgrounds. So if I'm using certain words, I'm excluding. You know, the closer I keep it to a lingua franca, a common language, the more I can be assured that everyone can be on the same page.
And in English, especially in business English, there's pressure to match the vocabulary of your industry. And I think for a lot of my clients who have English as a second or third or sometimes fourth language, that pressure is twice as strong. They're not just trying to sound professional, but they're also trying to show that their English is good enough. So they tend to reach for bigger words sometimes, longer sentences. And what happens to the person listening?
Very often I find people for whom English isn't a first language aren't necessarily sensitive to which words you would or wouldn't use. I'm discovering this in Spanish as I'm reading, and I don't have context, and I use a word in a sentence like atuendo, which I thought just meant your outfit. And somebody said, that word, it's so archaic. Like I'm speaking Cervantes. And I asked Claude from Anthropic to give me a plan to improve my Spanish. And so it gave me a diagnostic and it asked me, tell me about your home. So I told it everything I could. I didn't try to get the grammar right. But I used a couple of words that I had learned, like azotea, which is like a rooftop garden. And Claude kept saying, wow, there's a huge gap between your reading and your speaking because you know all these fancy words, but you don't know how to use them.
And I think when people are listening to complicated speaking or overly complex grammar, it does tend to create more mental effort. So when a listener has to decode difficult vocabulary and understand your idea at the same time, they're kind of doing two jobs at once. And I think something that I'd like to address before we go much further today is the message of this podcast. We have to be careful with what we're saying because we don't want it to backfire. We've been talking about simplicity, plain language, cutting the jargon. And I think we both stand behind all of that, but we need to look at the difference between building your vocabulary and expressing yourself with it. When I'm working with people and I use the word build, I usually use it in the sense of collecting words, studying them, practicing them, or making them genuinely yours. That process should never stop. But expressing means showing up in a real conversation, in a real meeting, and choosing the words that actually fit, not the words that just sound impressive.
The analogy that comes to me is a chef. My daughter is a very good cook, and she is great at all sorts of different ethnic cuisines, which means her spice cabinet is extensive. So if you think of the spice cabinet as your vocabulary, but one of the things she doesn't do is put every spice in every dish. In fact, she'll use like these three spices for a biryani, these four for a Thai curry, these three for a burrito, and she'll use them sparingly as well. She won't just pour on a half a cup of cardamom. But if she didn't have that range, she would be limited in what she could create. Think of fancy words as spices. You can throw one into a sentence or a couple in a report. And because it's a small amount, I'm sure you know as a teacher of language around the sweet spot for comprehensible input is you should be understanding about 97 to 98% of everything. And that 1 to 2% can then slot in. So when you're speaking, you want to be that comprehensible as well.
I didn't know that your daughter was quite a chef. That's great. I think for lawyers, for example, if they're drafting a contract, they obviously need precise technical language. That's not jargon. It's just being accurate. So I think the skill we're really talking about is what would be called register awareness, reading the room and choosing the version of your language that serves that audience in that moment as well. I know in my singing days, I would often show up to the venue 1 or 2 days in advance just to make friends with the space.
In crime movies, they would say you're casing the joint.
You're casing the joint. Great expression. Excellent. So let's move on to vocabulary and phrases that you might find useful in your daily interactions at work. So two phrases that come to mind. The first one is in plain terms, or to put it simply. And generally, these phrases show a certain level of confidence that you know the topic so well that you can explain it clearly and directly, and you can use them before a key point. So for example, if I said, to put it simply, we need to focus on three priorities this quarter. Or, in plain terms, this change will save us 2 hours every day. So, in plain terms, to put it simply. The next one is the bottom line, or the bottom line is. And this is a direct results-focused phrase, and it's very common in North American and British business culture. And it shows that you care about outcomes, not just words. So, for example, if I were to say, the bottom line is this approach saves us time and money. And the bottom line also has other meanings, like the bottom line could be your profits.
Yeah, I think that's where it comes from, the idea that these numbers are all important, but they're important because they contribute to the bottom line of the spreadsheet, which is, did we make money or lose money? Another similar phrase that's come to us from computer science is the TLDR, which stands for too long, didn't read. When we're talking about being direct, we're also talking about the TLDR and the kind of total information overload, where AI has produced more content in the past year than humans have ever created, where emails can get longer, when meetings can feel longer. What do you find as a communication coach and expert? What cuts through? What helps people get their message across?
With let me be direct, for example, or using phrases like that to cut through, you're kind of giving the listener a moment to really tune in or to focus on your words, right? It's a preamble or let me prepare you for this. The word direct in English in this context tends to carry a little bit of respect for the listener. It can say on one level that I value your time. Another thing is that it's strong to say out loud. The stress usually falls on the word direct, which is short and clear. So the listener hears confidence before you've even made your point. A person should develop a phrase bank of useful short phrases to cut through the noise or to at least prepare people for what's coming next instead of just jumping right in, especially if they're talking about issues that can otherwise be quite complex. That's a way for the listener to prepare mentally for what's coming.
So let me ask you another question. As someone who works with people from many different cultures, the word direct or the idea of respecting someone's time by being quick about it, I don't think that's universal. I think there's many cultures in which I would call beating around the bush or helping people save face or reading between the lines or the person with a certain degree of authority gets listened to regardless of their delivery. How do you help people navigate, an Anglo world in which directness has a very different cultural valence?
I would say most of the people I work with who are in corporate environments are working with multicultural teams and are often communicating with people in the English-speaking world. I often curate articles that are connected in one way or another to the client's workplace environment or the industry or something that they're preparing for. So when people are expressing their ideas after we read an article together, I make a point of asking them to summarize this or give me your opinion in just a couple of sentences. Try to make it digestible. Because again, when people are put on the spot or even when they're working in private coaching sessions, they often want to demonstrate their advanced knowledge of the language. And sometimes it is extremely impressive, but I will often advise them to break down what they're saying into simpler words, even if they feel the itch or the impulse to load it up with five extra sentences. But at the moment, English is still the international language of business, and it's the lingua franca. And maybe in 100 years, it'll be a different language, or maybe it'll be telepathy. But because we're living within that context, my goal is to do what I can to help people become more direct communicators in general.
I think there's a difference between someone who speaks in simple language having mastered complexity. When you think about, let's say, abstract artist who could still draw a photorealistic drawing or a painting, there's something that they have on the other side. Oliver Wendell Holmes Sr. said, for the simplicity on this side of complexity, I wouldn't give you a fig. But for the simplicity on the other side of complexity, for that, I would give you anything I have.
So it's love like, that.
I think what we're saying is learn the language, get good at it. And then when you speak simply, there's a different weight and feel and currency to it.
That's beautiful. Another kind of interesting way of looking at this. I have heard stories of famous jazz musicians when they were learning a new piece or a new melody, they would sometimes learn it backwards as well, so that when they were improvising, they jump into it anywhere.
Which reminds me of a joke. How do you get a rock guitarist to stop playing? You put sheet music in front of them.
Yeah, exactly. Because as most of us know, in pop music, there are very few people who can actually read notes. But people like Sir Paul McCartney couldn't read a note, and he's created some beautiful melodies. We've got all sorts of cultures for hundreds of thousands of years who have beautiful, complex melodies that were often just orally transmitted. And that worked quite well for a long time until our attention spans started to die. And the other category for younger people too, people who have grown up text messaging, as language has really been bastardized by texting, where people are constantly using shorter phrases like be right back or LOL and all of that, or even the emojis, which kind of goes back to Egyptian hieroglyphics.
So I have a story that amused me about the use of LOL. So someone my age, which is to say not a texting digital native, was getting into it, and a friend wrote that her sister had died. And so this person responded, LOL, which of course means laugh out loud, which caused a bit of a rift. Like, why would she say something that insensitive? And it turns out she thought LOL meant lots of love. I think that's a fundamental issue of language, is that it's always going to be fungible. Lots of slang turns things on their head. So good things are bad or evil or wicked. And then even things like this craze where kids just kept saying 6-7 and raising their hands. I think for me, the bottom line around communication is the more you can get to know people and be trusted by them and trust them, the more effectively you will communicate. So when we're talking about simplicity and complexity, what are the specific language habits do you hear most often that get in people's way?
First, turning verbs into nouns. So people will say, we made a decision instead of we decided. So sometimes when we add this type of extra word pattern, it does take away the energy from the sentence. And the second one, which is even a bigger issue, especially when people are trying to show that they speak English very well, they're stacking hedges. To hedge is to soften what you say so it sounds less direct, less certain, or more polite. I'll give you an example of something that people will say, oh, I've heard Canada is a cold country. Yeah, for 6 months or 5 months of the year, it is brutally cold. But in the summertime, it can go up to almost 40, right? So I would hedge that and say Canada can be a cold country rather than Canada is a cold country. So hedging is a big deal. People tend to stack them on top of each other. So they might say something like, I would tend to think that it might perhaps be worth considering.
People hedge when they are afraid of how the message will be received. So there's the accuracy hedge of Canada can be a cold country, where we're saying it's not an absolute. There are shades of gray here. The hedge you're talking about is, I don't really want to get to the end of the sentence because then I'm going to have to face your reaction to it.
Right, exactly.
I work a lot with people on this idea of, I have to avoid things that make me feel bad, because that's a very limiting way of being. So I work with people on their nervous systems to, can you handle my disapproval? Right? If you came to me and said, Howie, I'm not happy with the way you've been pulling your weight with this podcast lately, and you're afraid that I'm going to have a reaction. And so you spend 10 minutes with a preamble getting to that point. First of all, I can tell, right? And I'm just feeling worse and worse, and I'm getting irritated. And one of the things that I learned from a teacher of mine, Peter Bregman, was lead with the punchline. So say, Howie, this doesn't feel fair, this division of labor. Can we talk about it? Yeah. And then it's out. So hedging is not just a non-native speaker of English problem. I think it's a human problem.
Definitely. People often start too late to get to their main point, but say your main point first and then support it.
Yeah, and that's how I write. So I'll write an article, leave it for 2 days, come back to it, and get rid of the first half because it was all preamble. And somewhere in the middle, I'll find the main point and start there and then do a rewrite.
That sounds like the way that I pack for a trip now. So what I do and what my wife does now is we pack, and then a day or two later, we take out half of our stuff from our suitcases, and we still are fine wherever we're going.
Yeah. So I think clean underwear is probably overrated.
Yeah.
So far, we've mostly been talking about conversation, but sometimes a person would have to give a presentation. And the nice thing about that is they have a little bit of time to prepare in advance the topic, but also right before they're about to speak, they can prepare themselves a little bit. So how do you advise people to warm up? Something they can do that will help them slow down and land their message.
Read one paragraph of any text out loud, slowly, before you go into your meeting. And this isn't to practice the content necessarily. It's just to warm up your voice and your face muscles. When I sang professionally, we had a few kind of facial stretching exercises that we would do. One is like this, where you stretch your neck here like that and switch between. And that sort of gets the blood flowing. And then the other one for the whole mouth, where you're just really broadening and expanding the mouth as far as you can. And then the other one, and you can probably speak to this even more than I can, but for breathing, I think 3 or 4 slow, deep belly breaths, not up on your chest, but down in your belly, breathe from your stomach. I find it naturally slows down the speaking pace, and it brings your voice down slightly as well and reduces that tension that makes speech sound a bit rushed sometimes. Mm-hmm. So again, these are not things that take 20 minutes. You could do all of this in 90 seconds.
I love that. I was just thinking back to the choir where we met and some of the warm-ups we would do. Remember we did I Wander Through the Lovely Woods? Do you remember that one?
Oh boy, that's going back a few decades, Howie. A few things have happened since then. I think I do remember the lip exercise. I think we may have done that a few times with the for the lips.
So we did we did the vowels with that.
Wow. You've got a great memory, man.
Maria going up by half tones. It was Maria.
So from the mindset side, what's the key shift that helps a leader actually keep communicating simply?
Yeah, I think the key shift is to think about the service you're providing to the other person through your communication. So if I'm up to give a speech and I'm thinking about how will they think of me? Will I get the sale? Will I impress them? Then I'm centered on me and I can become hyper self-aware. I can worry. If I think, what do they need to know? How can I serve them? How can I be of service to this person in front of me to tell them something that will help their life, that will be important, that will help them perform better? Then the focus is on them and it becomes much more natural. Think about, let's say, someone who's just taken the medical school exam and they're not sure how they did. And they're walking down the street and they see somebody trip and fall and hurt themselves and they're in an intersection. This person is not going to worry, will I get the answer right? They're going to rush and help. So thinking about the other person, thinking about the message and how it's going to help the other person will take away a lot of self-consciousness that can get in the way of good communication.
And if a person is giving a presentation, I would say from every key point, try to say it in one clear sentence first, not a paragraph, just one sentence. And you can ask yourself, what's the one thing I need this audience or this person to understand? So that's another way of kind of distilling, not necessarily dumbing down, but using language, again, that is appropriate for the situation.
I had a communication coach who was helping me with a speech. And the way he started was, imagine you have a microphone and the entire world is going to listen to you for 15 seconds. What do you say? And that was very helpful in focusing me on the main point and that everything that I said had to support that main point somehow. So as you help people become better communicators, when you give somebody a simpler word, say use instead of leverage, do you find that people actually use it or leverage it? Or does the old pattern tend to come back under pressure?
It depends on how we work with it. But one technique I've used is when we do see those words, I create dialogues with the person connected to a work meeting at their company. But I'll tend to drop that word into the dialogue a few times. But sometimes if I just give someone a new word, the old habit usually wins under pressure. And I think habit tends to beat intention very often. What works in practice is saying the phrase out loud until it feels more natural than the old word. The goal is to make the simple version automatic, but again, it takes repetition.
So we've got a listener challenge, a tool for you to try. It's called the Simplicity Audit, which is a fancy word for the opposite of what you actually want to do. It's the Keep It Simple test or the Simplicity Audit. Sean, what is it? What do you want people to do?
Yeah, so for example, you could take one email you've sent this week or one you're about to send, and you could ask 3 questions. The first one would be, can you cut 20% of the words without losing the meaning of the email? The second one, is there any word with more than 3 syllables that you can replace? And yes, in certain circumstances, that 3-syllable word would be accurate or non-negotiable, but think about it. Are there any words with...
Like syllable.
Like the word syllable. Yeah. And going back to my one sentence rule, can you say your main point in one clear sentence? So then what you could do is rewrite it, compare the 2 versions, and look at which one would you rather receive? Which one would you rather get from somebody?
Essentially, you're doing the work for them. There's a quote that I've heard many times attributed to many different people. It goes like this: forgive this long letter. I didn't have time to write a short one.
Brilliant. Why is it so hard for smart, successful people to let go of complex language, even when they know it's working against them?
I think partly it's habit. It's partly an education system, which evaluates you based on how many words you know. And I think there's ways in which these words act as shields, as protectors. And when you let them go, you're a little bit vulnerable, because now we're talking about the quality of your ideas, the value of your contributions, as opposed to the way you've wrapped them up. So, Sean, I think that's a wrap for today. It's WRAP. We didn't actually wrap, but we're wrapping it up. And so I have to let people know that if they want to work on English communication and accent clarity, they can book a free discovery call with you by following the link in the description or the show notes below.
And if you want to work on leadership, communication, or mindset, book a free discovery call with Howie. Until next time, keep it clear, keep it confident, and keep it human.
And we'll see you on the Fluent Edge.